Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Planetary Powers. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight we have a special show for you. We have three giants in the field of UFO investigations and paranormal mysteries, and we're going to speak about the contributions of a titan, Timothy Green Beckley, to these areas of endeavor. We have today Sean Castile. We have Tim Schwartz, and we have Olav Phillips, and we will start with Sean Castile. Sean Castile is a freelance journalist who's been writing about UFOs, alien abductions, and many other paranormal subjects since 1989. Sean's writing appeared in many UFO and paranormal-related magazines, including UFO Magazine, Tim Beckley's UFO Universe, Fate Magazine, Mysteries Magazine, and Opens Minds Magazine, most of which are now defunct, but were a major part of a thriving UFO press in their heyday. Magazines in the UK, Italy, Romania, and Austria also published Sean's work. Sean has written or contributed over 30 books for Global Communications and Inner Life Publications, all of which are available from Amazon.com. Greetings and welcome to the show, Sean. How are you?
Doing all right, Hercules. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, this is your first time on the show, so how did you first meet Tim Beckley?
I don't know. I guess it's kind of a long story. Our relationship sort of evolved over the years. One of the very first articles I sold when I started writing about UFOs was a small article on Whitley Strieber that was published in UFO Magazine. UFO Magazine was had gone out of business more than 10 years ago, but at the time they were great. They were like the most respected publication in the field.
I remember.
So anyway, I had this article on Whitley Strieber published, and when I got my contributor's copy of the magazine, there was an ad in the magazine for Tim Beckley's magazines. So I figured, well, why not try Tim Beckley too? Why not try to market my UFO writing wherever I could? So I wrote to Tim Beckley, and he got back to me, and that began a beautiful friendship, as they say.
And it's lasted for many years and over 30 books, I understand.
Right. Well, Tim Beckley and I first made contact in 1989, 1990. And like I said, he began publishing my earlier stuff. One of the very first things that I sold to Tim Beckley was a Q&A with Bud Hopkins. I don't know if you're aware of how big a name Bud Hopkins was at the time.
Oh, yeah, I remember Bud Hopkins. I'm in my 60s, so I remember all these things.
Right, well, that's good, yeah. So he was a huge pioneer in the field of alien abduction. And, you know, Tim liked it well enough to use it. So that was one of my early tokens of cool or whatever when Tim published my Bud Hopkins Q&A. And as the years went by, I wrote more and more articles for his magazines, and then his magazines went out of business, unfortunately. His distributor didn't get him on the newsstands anymore. So I switched from writing articles for Tim to writing books for Tim. And I think the first book I did for him came out in 2003. And, you know, steady work after that.
And the rest is history, and that's how you and I connected also, through the writing of these books. Thank you very much. I'm going to introduce Tim Schwartz. Tim Schwartz is an Indiana native, an Emmy Award-winning television producer, videographer, and he's the author of a number of very popular books, including Tim R. Schwartz's Big Book of Incredible Alien Encounters. He's also a contributing writer for many books such as Real Ghosts, Restless Spirits, and Haunted Places. Welcome back to the show, Tim. It's great to have you on today.
Why, thank you, Hercules. As always, it's a great pleasure to be with you.
And you've shared the story before, but since this is an episode where we're paying tribute to Tim again in a different aspect of his work, how did you first encounter and start working with Tim Beckley?
Right. Well, I first met Tim around 1983. I was working for a television station in Dayton, Ohio, and at the time, J. Allen Hynek was doing a speech at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the Aerospace Museum there, talking about Project Blue Book. So I managed to get an interview with him for the station, and then put it up. The CBS satellite news feed wanted it, and this was something that you'd put a story up, and then any CBS station around the country could pick it up for their own newscasts. And Tim must have seen this on a New York station because he tracked me down and wanted a transcript of the interview and a VH copy if I could get him one. And I was more than happy to, because I told him at the time that I think one of the first books that I ever bought was his first book that he had written for Gray Barker's Saucerian Press. So, we remained in contact since that time, but I actually didn't start writing for him till around the time that he started publishing UFO Universe magazine. And he got a hold of me and wanted to know if I had any articles to contribute and if I wanted to possibly take a look at some of the other articles that people had contributed. Sean was not one of them. And, punch the articles up, some things like that. Sean's articles never needed punched up. I mean, if anything, he needed to look at my stuff to make sure everything was spelled correctly and the proofreading was right. From that time on, Tim Beckley and I remained in close contact. I wrote tons of stuff for him for his magazines. Like Sean said, once the company that was actually releasing Tim's magazines folded, Tim had already revigored his book publishing aspect of Global Communications. And so Sean and I we just made that easy transition from writing magazine articles to producing books for Tim.
Right.
Wow. Thank you so very much. And I will now introduce our third giant, Olav Phillips. Olav Phillips is a conspiracy researcher and writer specializing in the secret space program, exotic aircraft, high technology, foreign policy, prehistory, and mysterious civilizations. He's a regular contributor to several magazines and newspapers, as well as publishing the legendary Paranoia magazine. In addition to writing and publishing, Olav has been on numerous television and radio shows over the years. And he's also not only contributed to several books, but he authored The Secret Space Program and The Secret Cold War in Space. Welcome, Olav. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. How are you, Hercules?
Okay, and you've been on the show several times, and you shared the tale before, but since we're discussing the topic today, how did you connect with Tim Beckley?
So many years ago, I met him, I think through a mutual friend, Ron Patton, who works on Paranoia with me, and I didn't realize it, but I had been buying Tim's books for a very long time, and reading Sean's articles and Tim Schwartz's articles and the magazines. And I had been buying that stuff for a long time. And I started to write a few pieces for his books. And then he contributed some stuff to Paranoia and some other things. So yeah, that's how I met him. I was a fan of the Conspiracy Journal as well.
I will share my tale now, just so we've all shared our tale. I first became aware of Global Communications Inner Light when I was a teenager. And it was publishing, in addition to like new things that were going on with people in the paranormal and UFOs, it also was publishing a lot of really hard-to-get books. They were long out of print, and usually you had to go to specialty stores like Weiser's, pay a lot of money, and wait years sometimes for them to track down these books for you. So Tim kept them in print, and I became aware of them. I believe initially the first book was on Apollonius of Tyana. When I was still a kid in my teens, I started doing mediumship or deep trance mediumship, it was called back then. Now it's called channeling, for a theosophical spiritualist group. And I found myself in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and I went on a quest to try to locate Global Communications Inner Light. And, of course, I didn't succeed. It was a P.O. box. Recently I found out how close I actually got to the house in my seeking. And I actually met him years later at John Keel's Fortean Society. Tim used to go there sometimes, and sometimes used to go afterwards when they'd eat together. And Antonio Huneas, Stanton Friedman, a lot of other luminaries were regulars there. And then we didn't contact each other till he was making movies. And at that time, I had a cable show, like a fringe cable show, and I was starting to do some podcasting. So Tim was one of my first guests. Then he sent me a box of goodies, of books that he published, and videos. And so that kept me busy writing reviews for quite a while. And I didn't really get to see Tim after that. We kept in touch because of the writing for the books that came out. And toward the end, when he was sick, I kind of pulled back, and I didn't want to call him. I didn't want to bug him. So I regret not doing so, because then he passed on. Tim passed away on my birthday, 10 years to the day after my father passed away, also on my birthday. So I don't know what that means synchronistically, but that's my story. Now, Tim is famous for a great many things, some of them related to the paranormal, some of them not related to the paranormal. And what he did through his writings, not of preserving ancient or lost works, but on what is going on in the world today, in the world of paranormal, it drew attention to a lot of cosmic spirituality. And like one example is the Ashtar Command. Another example is Mark Age. I'm friends with the Philel of the Mark Age in the Motok Chronicles, and I heard a lot of stories from him and Tim, and in some of Tim's books there are pictures of Philel and what he was doing at the time when he was writing for the magazines and the books and so forth. What is your awareness of Tim's motivation and Tim's contribution to keeping cosmic spirituality in the public eye and alive? And we'll start with Sean.
Well, you know, I knew you were going to ask this kind of question, and I'm trying to think of a really good, compact answer. I think one of the major things Tim did in those terms was to not turn his back on the contactees. You know, most so-called serious UFO research totally sneered at the contactees. They were crazy people. Did not want to be associated with the contactees. You know, get these Venus guys out of my face. But Tim didn't have that attitude about it. He recognized in the contactees that whether or not their experiences were literally true, they were nevertheless a sincere accounting of something they believed had happened to them. It was an introduction, you know, the world's introduction maybe, to an open, loving, spiritual kind of contact. If a person said that he met the aliens and they took him to Mars, you know, instantly thumbs down. But what's really happening there? What's really happening when that person says, well, they took me to Venus or something? What is that spiritual connection that's in there, genuine in there, and not something to be sneered at? See what I'm saying? I mean, there's enough sincere good-heartedness in all that. That you shouldn't just toss it aside as non-scientific. Exactly.
Doing the same thing. I focus on the contactees for much the same reasons as you've shared. Something happened to them. You don't know exactly what it is that happened to them in terms of consensus reality, but something profound happened to them, and that profound happening has not only a transformative effect on them, but on the society around them.
Right. It certainly changed the way people look at reality in general, I think. It's what the late psychiatrist Dr. John Mack called ontological shock. Essentially what that means is once you realize this paranormal phenomenon actually exists, that the UFOs and the aliens and so forth are literally, physically and psychically real, your whole picture of reality changes. You have no way of looking at the world the same way you did before. And I think the contactees, in a way, had that same effect on world consciousness. Because the strange stories they told, while they weren't, you know, instantly believable, got people to lean a certain way, to lean their head into a more positive kind of wind, you know, if I'm making myself clear. Something, you know, they for the most part, said they met gentle, loving creatures. Now, who's going to complain about that? Who's
right.
going to say gentle, loving creatures are no good?
Very, very true. Thank you so very much, Sean. Tim.
Yeah, well, you know, Tim Beckley, he really did. He had a soft spot, I think, for the contactees. Well, you know, I mean, you have to realize, of course, that when Tim was a teenager and was first getting involved in the whole UFO thing, it was the contactees that were the ones that were really getting all the attention at the time. So I think it would be, yeah, I think it was only natural that Tim would have a tendency to, you know, lean towards them, since that was what he was first introduced to. And, you know, he may not have necessarily believed all of their stories, because, I mean, and that's something that we talked about quite
yes.
often. And, you know, one of the things I think that we agreed on was that a lot of these contactees probably did have initial experiences, you know, a few here or there, but then, as you know, that which is, this is part of the strangeness of the whole UFO phenomena, then it stopped for them, and of course they wanted to keep their publicity going. So I think some of them actually then started to, you know, embellish their stories and include stuff that didn't actually happen, but you know, only because, again, they were just as mystified, I think, as the rest of us on what was going on with them. Why were they having these contacts, and why did these contacts just suddenly stop? And the thing that you asked earlier, Hercules, about the cosmic spirituality, early mediumship channeling movements, even before the late 1940s with the whole modern age of UFO, you had spiritualist mediums who claimed that they were in contact with extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people were already, I mean, as far back as, you know, like the 19th century, people were already being introduced to, you know, some kind of, you know, cosmic spirituality / philosophy from these extraterrestrial beings. And, I mean, that has continued on even through today. I don't think that people nowadays take it nearly as seriously as they did early on. You know, people now are much more rooted in the material. And, you know, if we're going to have contacts with extraterrestrials, I think the modern belief is, then they want to see physical extraterrestrials uh-huh. coming down and flying saucers and getting out and, you know, waving to the cameras and things like that. And but you know, that's one of the things that Tim liked to keep alive was that cosmic spirituality, the channeling and all that that was really predominant, and you know had a resurrection, especially in the 50s and early 60s.
You know, I don't think Tim on some level he didn't really care what his critics thought. You know, he believed what he believed, and he was willing to stick to his guns about it. So,
definitely.
He left us a legacy that, and you guys were all part of building that legacy that will last for a very long time. What you say is true, Tim. Swedenborg traveled to other planets, and the book still exists in its imprint. And if you go back to antiquity, there are many cases of the planets speaking through their oracles and so forth. So, yes, it's a very old phenomenon, and the contactee movement was its more modern manifestation. Thank you so very much. Olaf.
You know, I think I agree with Sean and Tim. You know, I think that the power of what Tim Beckley did was that he, you know, he wasn't, number one, he didn't care what other people thought. He believed what he believed. And, you know, as Sean said, you know, he stuck to it. But I think that in doing that, you know, he was willing to tell all the stories, not just one. And I think, especially now in ufology, you know, we are pushed, you know, through media and other things into following one storyline. You know, they're not UFOs anymore. Now they're UAPs. And it's like Tim was very open to the entire gambit of the Fortean experience. Cause you know, it's not just, you know, contactees and UFOs. I mean, he did books about all kinds of stuff, angel magic, and you know, obviously now we're talking about cosmic spirituality, so you're talking about the contactees. But I think the power of what Tim did is that he gave all the different constituent groups a voice, and you
exactly.
don't see that a lot anymore.
He said at one point, since no one knows what the ultimate truth is, we still don't have any kind of ultimate answers by any approach we've taken. Why not listen to every
Precisely.
Point of view? Why is it
yeah.
one guy's point of view as worthwhile as the others?
Exactly. And I think that what we find today is that, you know, we've narrowed that view. So, you know, I don't know all the answers. I don't know if Unarius is right or Ashtar Command or, you know, the various contactee movements that exist, the Adamski cosmic spirituality stuff. I don't know if it's the right answer or not, but I think that what Tim taught us was that it's important to listen anyway and not close that door and to be flexible and to be open and say, look, we don't know what the answer is, so let's look at everything and try to sort it out versus I have the answer. In ufology today, you know, and 4chan research in general, you know, everybody's got the answer, and I think that that's a fallacy. I personally don't have any answers. I can only tell you what I figured out, and I think that was Tim's approach was, you know, give everybody a voice, and I respected him for that.
And that's a great answer. Thank you so very much. One of the things I found surprising, I just found this out recently, was that Tim channeled himself. And he put out a book called New World Order, Prophecies from Space. There was actually his channeling sessions, and it included a lot of the personalities that you meet in the contactee literature, especially Ashtar. I found out from the Carol Ann Rodriguez and from Maria D'Andrea, who gave me a lot of the background on this fact, and then Mark Brinkerhoff and Phyllis Brinkerhoff confirmed that Tim, although he put out that he didn't really believe, he tended to believe in the Ashtar Command. Can you guys add anything to this tale? We'll start with Sean.
Well, I think the Ashtar Command turned out to be important to me because it was also was parallel to the Christian belief in the Rapture. the idea of these angelic ships coming in and sparing a portion of humanity by simply taking them up off the earth. And that was one of the great things about Tim for me was he gave me such a free hand in writing about my own religious beliefs, mm-hmm. about writing about the religious theories that were important to me. I mean, I did 4 or 5 books on the Bible, and you know, Tim supported me all through that. I don't know a lot of editors who would have had that kind of patience with this kind of narrow religious view. But certainly Tim was, you know, he may not have talked a lot about it himself, but I agree with you. He had some kind of spirituality. And I think his office person, Carol Ann Rodriguez, was a real Astar believer, and I think she was a good influence on Tim. She got Tim to... Go ahead.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's going to be on tomorrow. But she's an awesome person. I'm glad I finally met her. We'd exchanged emails, you know, because of my submitting to the books. But I didn't really get to know her until Tim's viewing. And she's an incredible individual.
Well, I'll always be grateful for her. I think she steered me in the right direction to the extent that I'm grateful for her influence.
Thank you very much. Tim?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad that you've got Carol to come on your show, because I think out of everyone, Carol has been the closest with Tim for the longest amount of time. So, I mean, you know, she worked for him. She was friends with him. They traveled a lot. So, you know, if anybody is going to have some of the best stories and the best dirt on Tim, it's going to be Carol. Tim and I, we discussed a little bit about his early channeling sessions, but not too much. I don't know how comfortable, ultimately, Tim actually was with doing that. Because, I mean, it can be for those who haven't done it, it can be kind of a scary experience,
mm-hmm.
just opening yourself up and letting, you know, whatever it is that's out there, you know, come through you and, you know, start either talking to through you or using, you know, automatic writing and things like that. And I think that, I think it kind of surprised him that he was able to do it so efficiently. I don't think that he was expecting it to actually work from the impression that I got. And, you know, and I may be completely wrong. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, Carol probably would have a better viewpoint on that. But, you know, the impression that I got when Tim was talking about this was that it's not that he was skeptical, because he knew that these things happened, but I don't think that he thought that he could have the ability to do it and to come up with the type of material that he did. And he only did it a few times and then he stopped. He never really, you know, said to me why he stopped, but I suspect it was just like, okay, I've done this. I'm going to stop now. you know, because there are some people, as we well know, who can handle it quite well, and then there are others who become obsessed, literally, and it becomes a part of their life that may not be welcomed. And so I think that Tim made the decision that, okay, I've done this, I'm going to move on now.
And I could respect that decision. I made the same decision with the channeling years ago as well. Like, I could certainly understand and relate to what you're sharing. Thank you. Olaf?
You know, I really, until I found out about it recently, I really didn't know that he had done that. But I'm not surprised, you know, the stories that I've heard about him. You know, I didn't hear a lot of, I got a lot of advice from him. And I had a lot of conversations with him about the books and what to write and, you know, and some other odds and ends. But I didn't know him well enough to have a conversation about his channeling. But I'm not surprised, because the one thing that I always struck me about him is he seemed, and this, you know, this is based on conversations I've had with other people that knew him, like Greenfield and others, is that, you know, he seemed to be in the thick of it. That he, you know, he wasn't, maybe later, you know, not so much, but when he was younger, at least, you know, he was out there and he was actually trying to experience stuff and see stuff and talk to people and do things. So I'm not surprised that, you know, he got curious about it and attempted it. I mean, it is, you know, I've never channeled, but I've, you know, I've come close, and it can be a very frightening thing. So I'm not surprised that once he had accomplished it, he said, okay, well, I did this. It's time to move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Would you guys like to know what it feels like? I can share that if you'd like.
Sure, go for it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The first time it happened, I was concerned for a friend. This was in high school, who was involved in some psychic group. So, you know, because of what I knew about cults, I was concerned. So she arranged the meeting, and I was just by talking to them. And it was in a Greek restaurant in the 70s in New York. All of a sudden, I felt very strange. I felt very tired. And then I felt like somebody had drugged me or something. And then before I realized what was going on, something was talking for me and talking to this person. And they seemed to be speaking using the same lingo. They had a conversation. And then she told me what happened to me, and that she would train me, and that she knew the spirits that had spoken through me. So I was, again, still suspicious and a little bit scared. Something like that had never happened to me before. But I did undergo the training because I was curious. And I love things paranormal, and I've had different types of paranormal experiences since as far back as I can remember. So there's like a procedure that they used to go through. You sit in the chair. They have water for you because you need water afterwards. The water also reflects spirit activity. When the spirit activity bubbles form in the water, like in great amounts, but it's essentially you let go and energy shoots up your spine, and then your head feels like it's wide open. And then you learn how to let certain spirits near, and they kind of like protect you from any undue influences. And then different beings come in and speak. And some of the beings are very articulate and others aren't. They are basically the type of entities that they would get at seances. So you had Oriental people or people from India. You had American Indians. You had people from past civilizations. Then you had ascended masters and people from outer space. And although it's all like automatic, over time, a very consistent set of information comes out and is recorded. And it's amazing to the person channeling how consistent the information is over time, because you don't really remember all the time what you said. So it was a very interesting experience. I finally left it because I felt very uncomfortable as a teenager having adults listen to information that was coming out of my mouth and acting on it. I felt that they should act on their own information and make their own decisions rather than relying on, you know, whatever it was that a teenager was producing. I felt the phenomenon was real, but I just didn't think it was healthy in that regard. So that's my experience with channeling. Now, each of you is an investigator, and each of you is someone that I greatly admire and I'm proud to be associated with. How about your own explorations into cosmic spirituality? What have you explored, and what conclusions have you come to? Sean?
Well, I think one of the most basic conclusions I've come to is that the God of the Bible is is another manifestation of the UFOs and the aliens occupants. I think there's no doubt about that. Now, there's enough correlations between the Bible and the modern UFO accounts that you simply can't ignore that idea. You have to basically accept that there's a relationship there. So, in a lot of ways, that at least the subject opens to a lot of discussion. You're not just bound to a fundamentalist approach to the Bible. You have a much more open, more living spiritual approach than I think you can get in a typical fundamentalist church. So, you know, contact is a living thing. You're part of something real, and it's, you know, the Bible is just, I've heard it called the world's greatest book of ufology. And that's probably true. I mean, I rarely read something in there that to me doesn't relate to the UFO phenomenon. And of course, that's true of other religions too, like the Hindu. You read the Bhagavad Gita. So much of that just sounds like the same kind of God of the Old Testament. What, you know, Joseph Campbell, are you guys familiar with Joseph Campbell and the power of myth, that kind of comparative religion? I think the reason all that stuff blends so well is because it springs from the same source. It springs from this extraterrestrial source as filtered through the cultures and religions of the world. You're dealing with the same light at the end of the tunnel. It just comes in different forms and guises. And currently in our technological age, UFOs are the current guise for that. They're the current vessel for what the Lord is sending to us. So, I've written books on this subject. It's hard to just encapsulate it into a 10-minute thing. But,
well, I'm looking forward to reading those books. I enjoy books like that, and I've made the connection, or I've reinforced the connection, because others have made it before me, about Greek mythology and UFOs.
We did a book on the Oracle of Delphi, too. I forget what the exact title was. But Tim took one of his girlfriends to Greece.
Uh-huh.
I was able to write the whole thing off because we did a book about it.
I have that that book. I don't remember the title, but I do have the book. I remember that and the pictures from Greece.
Right, right. Yeah, when Tim and I first started talking about you, I mean, I was supposed to go over some of your writing for our books. He told me he found a guy named Hercules, who basically believed in the gods of Olympus. I thought, only Tim could do that. only Tim could come up with somebody who believes in the gods of Olympus.
Well, I'm greatly honored to be described thus. Thank you, Sean. Tim?
Mm-hmm.
Well, myself personally, I mean, I have never attempted to channel. I mean, the closest that I've ever come was, you know, like as a kid, you know, playing with the Ouija board. But, you know, I think that's how a lot of people actually, you know, get their start. They'll do the Ouija board, maybe automatic writing, and see that they, you know, have a natural ability to it, and then it evolves from there. But I've gone to a lot of sessions with other people. I mean, the area that I grew up in, central Indiana, there was the spiritualist camp, Camp Chesterfield, which was located near Anderson, Indiana, really just, you know, less than 20 miles from where I grew up. Not only did you have people there who were, you know, spiritual mediumship, but they were also doing the channeling of, you know, some of these ascended masters and extraterrestrial beings. And over the years, I've come to the impression that the forces that we are dealing with along those lines, possibly are rather fluid in their identity, for want of a better term. I think it's almost like the theory that the gods are around as long as there are people who believe in them. And when people stop believing in them, then the gods take on new identities. You know, they go with the times, so to speak. And I think that could very well be the same thing when we're dealing with these channeled energies. There's definitely an intelligence involved, but because we live in the material world and we have hyper-focused consciousness and ego, it's hard for us to understand how if you are basically just pure consciousness, that ego aspect is not a part of it. And so when you then deal with the material world, it's I don't know. I mean, you know, possibly it's that creative aspects that we all have that we all share with the ultimate creation of the universe that we're able to help manipulate maybe these other forms of consciousness to take on new personalities of their own. That's not to say, though, that we should be dismissive of them, because I think that these energies, these other forms of consciousness also have access to that, what would it be, like the Akashic field, that universal database, so to speak. And along with that, and this is something that Tim Beckley and I, you know, discussed quite a bit, is that, you know, right now, everybody, the UFO field, the interest in UFOs have come back really, you know, I mean, it's really strong now, but it's either, you know, you read about it in the press, it's either extraterrestrials or nothing, or you know, man-made craft or things like that. And we've seen throughout the years that the extraterrestrial idea is only just really a small part of it. As you know, as we've been talking about, you know, with these, you know, with the cosmic channelings and things like that, you know, I think there's a very important, you know, spiritual, paranormal, whatever you would want to call it, aspect of the UFO phenomena, and the interactions with these spiritual aspects of the UFO phenomena, I think, is just as important as the material. Because UFOs have this kind of odd ability to appear and disappear at will, something that you wouldn't think that physical craft would be able to do. Yeah. I know that if you're dealing with a science that is way far ahead of our own, that, you know, things like that can look like magic, but I think that we need to concentrate just as much on the other aspects of the UFO phenomena rather than just the idea that we're dealing with scientists or explorers from other planets.
You know, I think Tim was believing that increasingly as the years went by. He was getting less and less nuts and bolts and more psychic supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was just part of the transition he was making as a believer.
Right.
So I'm sure he would totally resonate with what you're saying there.
And both what you and Sean and what Olaf have said deserve shows on their own. These are great topics to discuss. I found that too, that the entities can or the intelligences can assume whatever shape you're comfortable with communicating with. And initially, I went through a phase where they were being deceptive. But I've since come to the conclusion that they're just communicating with you in a way that you can understand.
I think that's really the hallmark of the ultra-terrestrial hypothesis, right? You know, which I'm a huge advocate of, is that, you know, we don't know what these things are. But what we do know is that in some cases, the people that interact with them have spiritual and religious experiences. You know, when you see a UFO around it, you know, in that area where the UFO is seen, there's a, you know, you get a lot of ghost sightings and you know, poltergeist activity, and then you see cryptids, and, you know, and you have these, you know, gnomes and fairies and, you know, these areas of high concentration of UFO activity. They aren't just, you know, a UFO descends out of the sky. It's like the UFO descends out of the sky, and then the Mothman's over there, and then over here you've got some ghosts and poltergeist activity. You know, it's all integrated. And I think that's the most monumental shift that I made as an individual, was to go from the nuts and bolts and to start to embrace this notion that it is all interconnected. That they're, you know, that in some cases these things that we're seeing, they're manifestations of some sort of greater universal intelligence that we're all plugged into. I mean, I've had dreams where I walked through the Akashic Record. I'm sure that's what it was. And I literally shared that dream with my friend who is in the room next to mine, and we were staying in a hotel, and she was in one and I was in the other, right? And we're both sleeping and we're both having the same dream, and she's in my dream and I'm in hers. Right. Hmm. And that's not possible. That is just not, well, apparently it is possible. And I think that the you know, this notion that there's like a universal constant that is, you know, it's intelligence is, I think, the sum total of all living things in the entire universe. But, you know, and I do believe that at times it's ruthlessly efficient. But I think that when we, you know, if you have a Christ experience, or you have a contactee experience, or you see a Roman god or an Olympian god or a Norse god, you know, ultimately, I think we're all seeing, you know, or you're Muslim or you're Hindu or you're Buddhist, you know, I think that we're all seeing basically the same thing. But it's like my professors used to tell me, you know, you got to read the room and you've got to write to the audience. And I think that they're manifesting to the audience, but the infrastructure in the back, so to speak, is a universal thing, you know, because I'm not a Buddhist. I'm just not a Buddhist, but I saw the Dalai Lama and he walked us through a meditation to see the medicine Buddha, and I swear on all that is holy and exists that I saw the medicine Buddha, which is a blue Buddha like suspended in midair. You know, and I saw it. I mean, my co-parent saw it, you know, and she at the time, you know, was open to it, but didn't really have a lot of experiences. You know, neither did I, but we both saw it. We were sitting side by side, you know. So I think that's what I came to, was that the universe is, there's a universal intelligence that's the sum total of all living things in the universe, whether they're aliens or they're, you know, Joe Bob down the street, you know, we're all, or the trees or whatever, we're all plugged into it at some capacity. And they just kind of, you know, under the ultra-terrestrial hypothesis, you know, they manifest in whatever way that is easiest for us to rationalize.
Wow, that was very eloquently stated, Olaf. Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, I'm definitely going to have to invite you guys back. We're up to our last 10 minutes, and I want to give everybody a chance to share their contact information. And I will be adventuring with all of you. I'm in the book that Sean and Tim are working on. I have writing that I owe to Olaf. and we have the podcast and other things. So I'm glad of that. And I'm grateful to Tim Beckley for connecting us. What are your upcoming adventures, and how can people get in contact with you, Sean?
Well, in terms of upcoming adventures, I'm afraid my slate is a little bit blank at this point. I don't really have anything planned. Tim Swartz and I are finishing up a book that Tim Beckley and I were working on when Tim Beckley died. So we're getting to the final crunch time of completing this book. we're going to include a lot of material in the book that is attributed to Tim Beckley. And, you know, we're going to certainly honor his memory by finishing the book. If you want to see my books, you should go to my Amazon author's page. I hope I'm telling you how to do this right.
Okay.
It's www.amazon.com/author/Sean Casteel. Spell my name, S-E-A-N-C-A-S-T-E-E-L. Yeah, so you go to my Amazon author's page. All the books I've written for Tim Beckley will be available there. You can get them Kindle or paperback. So, I mean, that's probably one of the best ways to honor Tim's memory is to buy some books.
Very well said. And there's an easier way. If they go to Amazon and type in your name, it'll bring up the books, and then your name will be, like, highlighted. If they click on that or the window that appears, then they can go to your author page if they don't remember the exact address.
Well, thanks very much. Thanks for making that easy.
Okay.
I didn't realize I could do that.
Neither did I until I kept losing people who were sending to my author page. So I played with it for a while and I found that it's easier to do that.
Well, good.
Tim?
Well, like Sean said, we are in the final stages of completing the book, The Dulce Warriors. It's the name of it, and this was the book that Tim was working on. It had pretty much completed it when he passed away, so it was left to Sean and I to put in the finishing touches, you know, get it formatted, add illustrations and things like that, and hopefully it will be ready for publication in maybe sometime in September is what I'm hoping for. You can find out more about myself, Tim Beckley, and Sean as well by going to our website, which is conspiracyjournal.com. Again, that's conspiracyjournal.com. All of my books are available on Amazon. Just type in my name and they'll all pop up. You'll find my author's page on there as well. I'm going to be a guest co-host for a couple of episodes on Gene Steinberg's show, The Paracast.
Awesome.
And that'll be coming up in the next couple of weeks. So you just go to theparacast.com, and when we've completed those shows, you'll be able to listen to them. And I know that after we finish the Dulce Warriors, there is some other books that Sean and I are hoping to put out from Tim Beckley's writings. And we just want to make sure that, his name stays out there. I don't think that's going to be too difficult. But,
no.
We want people to know for a long time to come. Just what kind of person Tim Beckley was, and what are important contributions that he made to ufology, but paranormal and all of the world of the weird.
Oh, Tim, could you also tell them how to get to Spectral Vision? Is there an easy way to get to the Spectral Vision website?
Oh gosh. Yeah, probably the best way to do it, because I can't think of the exact name of the website, but if you go to, say, my author's page on Amazon, one of the current blog article that is featured on there is from Spectral Vision. And,
right, that makes
you
sense.
Right, yeah. They'll just click.
Right.
I'm sorry?
It's the RSS feed.
Yes, that's right.
As soon as something gets posted on Spectral Vision, it automatically goes to our author's page.
That's right. So you'll be able to see the most current piece that we have on the Spectral Vision website, and then you'll be able to access, we've been putting out articles, I think, since about, 2014 on the site. So.
Thank you, and please, if you send me links to these things, I will gladly help promote them.
right.
And last but not least, Olaf Phillips.
Well, first of all, I think it's critical that we keep Tim's name out there and keep, you know, everything that he works so hard to do, you know, keep it in the public mind, right? You know, we need to, you know, everybody that that knew him, we all owe him that to keep people talking about him. But as far as my stuff, Paranoia Mags on Instagram, you can find me, Olaf Phillips on Facebook, Paranoia Magazine on Facebook, ParanoiaMagazine.com, The Celestial Lodge of Sirius.com. What else? We're working on the Hermetic Assembly of Light. Me and Alan Greenfield are going to try to reconstitute the Hermetic Brotherhood of Light as the Hermetic Assembly of Light. And, yeah, just find me. I'm easy. Google me. I'm on Amazon and everywhere. Send me an email.
Awesome. And my Hermetic show freed up. So in October, I'll have a regular date for that. If you're interested, I'll just make that your show.
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. So we will continue with that. We have a couple of minutes left.
Let's do some alchemy, man.
Definitely. We have a few minutes left. Are there any thoughts you'd like to leave with people who may be interested in these things but feel reluctant to explore them?
I have one, and it's
sure.
About Tim Beckley. You know, when I started reading this stuff, Beckley's books were not the first books that I read, but they ended up being my favorite. And it was because of the diversity of what was in those books and the range from completely sane nuts and bolts to absolutely crazy. Like the books were amazing. And you know, Sean's chapters and Tim Schwartz's chapters and, you know, they were amazing, and they just kept me reading more. The Commander X stuff. I think that given the prolific nature of what Tim Beckley did, and this is for Tim Schwartz and Sean Castile as well, these guys are prolific. I mean, on a magnitude that most people cannot comprehend. And I think the three of them, you know, obviously Tim Beckley was the publisher, but I think all three of them, you know, they hold a very special place in Fortiania and UFOs research. And I think that they all need to be, you know, thought about constantly, you know, and I think all three of them, I'm utterly honored to be on the phone with these guys.
Me too.
You know, but Beckley was so prolific that I think that he, you know, he's the one of the unsung heroes of Fortiania, as is Tim Schwartz and Sean Castile. So I wanted to say that. I think that those three people, two of which are on the phone with me, you know, I think that they created so much content and so much thought, original thought and research. And, you know, it's just they're not talked about enough, that they really are the unsung heroes of Fortiania.
So let us not let people forget that either. Thank you, Olaf. Tim?
Sure.
I couldn't have put it better myself. Thanks, Olaf.
Yeah, it's the nicest stuff I've ever heard, Olaf.
You guys are very welcome.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan.
Well, great.
So,
that's so nice to hear.
We have 90 seconds, I've been informed by the voice. Do you have anything you'd like to leave people with as we close the show?
All right. I will say here that it's spectralvision.wordpress.com. It's SPECTRAL vision.wordpress.com.
Great.
Thanks.
I hope people can track that down.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in. We have 60 seconds. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and are waiting in the list, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand, Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to end with Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true, and love is real.